So far in this series of Earthrise, I've seen how people are turning to the law to ensure those responsible for greenhouse gas emissions are held to account. Judgments in the Netherlands, where the Dutch government and the energy giant Shell were found to be in breach of human rights, are having a ripple effect around the world. In this programme, I'm looking at some more groundbreaking legal precedents which are being fought for by those seeking to protect our planet and all life on it. Peru, South America. In the Andes, high above the city of Huaraz, a delegation of judges, lawyers, scientists and activists, and the world's press, are trekking up to Lake Paccaricocha, at the base of the Paccarahu Glacier, the focus of a court case that could have major implications for the world's multinationals. It's been brought by farmer and mountain guide, Sal Luciano Julia.
El señal preocupante es la desglaciación. Cómo la roca está descubriéndose, ¿no? Como aquí al frente, bueno, las rocas que se ven como pulidos son porque ahí ha estado glaciar. Es eso, ¿no? Cuando voy a otras montañas es igual que está sucediendo.
The glacier's retreat has caused this lake to expand. It now poses a major flood risk to the city and its 140,000 inhabitants. In 2009, siphons were installed to drain excess water into the valley below. But 13 years on, and the melting glaciers are even more unstable. Any ice or rockfall could cause a displacement of water that would overwhelm the current defences. Huaraz would be inundated, and not for the first time. In 1941, a large avalanche fell into the lake. The resulting flood killed 1,800 people. At the time, the lake held 500,000 cubic meters of water. Now, it holds 34 times that amount. A flood today would be devastating.
La laguna está bastante grande, eso preocupa. Sabemos que los humanos estamos causando esto. No todos, hay industrias que sí están causando mucho más que otros. Industrias que están usando energías fósiles, carbón.
In 2014, Sal met members of environmental justice NGO German Watch. Together, they decided to take on one of the Global North's largest emitters, RWE. Rhoda Verheyen is Sal's lawyer.
RWE is a German energy utility on the list of the most polluting companies worldwide with respect to greenhouse gases, the Carbon Majors list. We're not saying RWE is responsible for the whole of climate change worldwide, only in so far as they have emitted, which is 0.47% of global emissions.
And so, Sal's team argued that RWE should pay 0.47% of the cost towards building flood defences for Huaraz, a sum of around $20,000.
RWE is here as a representative of large polluting companies, and it will not be the only one. So if we win this case, we will be bringing charges and applications against some of the other companies on that list.
In 2017, the court decided that climate damages can give rise to corporate responsibility. The case has now moved to the evidentiary phase, and that's why the delegation's here, to assess the danger to Sal and his home. Noah Walker Crawford is legal advisor for Sal's team.
In the back, we can see the glacier Paccarahu, which used to be much bigger. It used to come all the way up until here and even further forwards down to the valley.
The glacier has retreated 1.6 kilometers in the past 140 years.
As the temperatures started to rise, this glacier started moving back. It started melting off. And in the space where there used to be a glacier, this lake formed.
But can the melting of the glacier and the subsequent growth of the lake be attributed to man-made emissions? Is climate change responsible? 10,000 kilometres away in Oxford, UK, an answer to this question has been found. I've come here to meet research scientist Rupert Stewart-Smith.
Look at that.
So what you can see here is Laguna Paucarcocha in 1940, much shorter than the lake that we see today. But this lake, just 1 year later, burst onto the city of Huaraz below it. We know that temperatures had started to rise from 1880 onwards. And that initial warming prior to 1940 must have started to push this glacier back, creating this unstable landscape that ultimately led to the devastating event in 1941. This is among the earliest deadly disasters that have been linked to climate change in the scientific literature.
These old photographic records, along with historic temperature data and more recently satellite images, have enabled Rupert to model the retreat of the glacier.
As temperatures rise, we see the glacier start to pull back, with the lake expanding as it does so. In the latter half of the 20th century, we see a big acceleration in the retreat. And then the next question we ask of the model is, what would have happened in the absence of climate change? And what we see is the glacier that fluctuates backwards and forwards in this front section of the valley. And so because of that, our best estimate is that all of the observed retreats of the glacier are almost entirely due to human influence on the climate.
This research, called attribution science, uses a range of methods to see the fingerprints of climate change on global events. It's crucial, impartial evidence proving emissions have a direct impact on the lives of people even thousands of kilometres away. And that impact is all too present for Sal and the citizens of Huaraz.
Hoy vamos a darles un pequeño tour acá de Huaraz. Vamos a caminar por la parte de la zona de riesgo. Acá podemos ver las sirenas que han instalado para el sistema de alerta temprana, ¿no? Para alertar a la población en caso de que haya un desastre.
Policy director of German Watch, Christoph Balz, has been working closely with Sal.
I think it's an extremely significant case for the world. The sum of money which should come out here, it's about 20,000 euro. That's not the important thing. It's a precedence case that emissions produced in Germany have an effect everywhere in the world. So we are all connected as neighbors by those emissions. Just 10% of global emissions is produced by the poorer half of the world population. And they are the most affected already today. And they have hardly contributed to the problem.
I want to speak to Sal myself and find out how he feels about the situation.
A veces tengo la esperanza que sí vamos a ganar porque sí tenemos pruebas suficientes, pero también hay que pensar que estamos luchando ante un gigante y pienso que no es fácil ganar.
And if you win, what will that mean for the Andes and for your home?
Si ganamos, pienso que al menos hemos hecho algo. No hemos quedado con los brazos cruzados, como se dice aquí. Hemos buscado la solución de alguna forma.
I asked RWE for an in-person interview and received a written reply. In summary, it said,
climate change is an extremely complex matter, which has been contributed to by innumerable sources around the globe, and therefore it is judicially impossible to attribute specific or individual consequences of climate change to a single person or company. We have always been operating our plants in compliance with governmental permits and will become CO2 neutral by 2040.
The potential of cases like Sal's to be part of the solution for the climate crisis is attracting interest not just from the international media, but also academic circles. Back at Oxford University, I'm meeting Rupert Stewart Smith's colleague, Tom Wetzer. Together, they founded the Sustainable Law Programme, which works with researchers around the world. Their mission is to enable the law to catalyse systems change.
Law has traditionally very much been a local field, and with huge challenges like climate change, that's not going to cut it. We need to think globally. Many of the harms that are caused by climate change come from countries that traditionally have been more wealthy or that currently are more wealthy. And so the burden in terms of climate change has been disproportionately borne by people who are more vulnerable and who do not have the means to protect themselves.
So if Lula wins, this would be a really big deal.
That would be an enormous deal. That would be, you know, that would be a sea change. A judgment that would hold companies to account would be an enormously important development in the way that we think about the economics of climate change for these companies.
The law is already proving to be a powerful tool for some vulnerable communities. In September 2022, the United Nations Human Rights Committee ruled in favour of 8 plaintiffs from the Torres Strait Islands to the north of Australia. Their home is slowly being eroded as sea levels rise. The islanders accuse the Australian government of violating their human rights due to climate inaction.
I shed tears of joy. It was an awesome feeling. We know that the doors now has been opened. The government will listen to us, our cries for our future generations to remain here on this island.
I've come to London's legal heartland to meet one of the counsels on this case. Monica Feria Tinta is a barrister of Peruvian origin.
I have been an advocate for many of these communities around different regions in the world. It feels a privilege to help communities that otherwise wouldn't have the power, the possibility, the standing, you know, to face sometimes, you know, a state.
Monica recently became involved in a new type of case. In 2008, Ecuador had become the first country to enshrine the rights of nature in its constitution. Article 17 states, nature, or Pachamama, where life is reproduced and occurs, has a right to integral respect for its existence. All persons, communities, peoples, and nations can call upon public authorities to enforce the rights of nature.
The vision of the original people is that you are not separated from nature, you are part of it. So it made sense, actually, that this would be reinserted in a modern constitution, because the majority of the people in Latin America are indigenous.
13 years later, Article 17 was put to the test when the municipality of Cotacachi filed a case against the Ministry of Environment and the National Mining Company. It was brought on behalf of a richly diverse, protected virgin forest called Los Cedros.
This was the first time that the Constitution had such a case to pronounce itself on that point and tell us what this provision meant.
Gold and copper mines have polluted and destroyed habitats across Ecuador. And yet, mining concessions have been granted covering two-thirds of Los Cedros. Monica was asked to be a non-partisan expert for the case.
I didn't find any communities living in the forest. What I found was basically monkeys, species that were endemic, and you don't find these species anywhere else in the world. What was compelling is that I found myself at some point, you know, as an advocate for the earth, because my clients was not individuals, indigenous peoples, but nature. I felt a shift within myself in terms of my understanding of what was at stake for the future, you know?
In December 2021, Ecuador's Constitutional Court ruled in favor of the rights of nature, saying they were violated by the mining project. Monica reads me part of the decision.
The intrinsic value of nature through the recognition of rights is difficult to understand from a rigidly anthropocentric perspective, which conceives the human being as the most valuable species, while reducing the other species and nature itself to a set of objects or resources to satisfy human needs, especially those of an economic nature. And then the court continues. A violation of the right of nature to have its existence fully respected occurs through activities that lead to the extinction of a species. I think these two lines that I just read are perhaps one of the most important pronouncements, you know, that I have read and known of in recent years, and are fundamental, I think, for our survival.
This experience has made Monica reevaluate the purpose of the law.
We are starting to understand that this human-centric approach to rights is not working. This is a moment where our consciousness is changing, where the law is moving towards a deeper understanding of life, and with it, the need for its protection. And this comes from us, from our own ability to understand what is sacred, what is important to protect, and how do we achieve that.
Do you see your role as a lawyer as a sacred duty?
My ancestors were very connected with the earth. And ultimately, I feel that I have a responsibility. And yes, to me, everything that is living is sacred. Because there is something really deeply wrong in destroying something we cannot create.
Around 40 other jurisdictions now have some form of law recognizing that nature has rights. But none were in Europe, until recently. This is the continent's largest saltwater lagoon, the Mar Menor in Murcia, southern Spain. Its shallow waters and high salinity make it a unique ecosystem. But it's being accosted by human activity on a number of fronts. Pedro Luengo is a campaigner and biologist. He regularly goes out to monitor the water quality.
Why is it so unhealthy?
Pues esto está así por la entrada de nutrientes que vienen principalmente de la agricultura en el campo de Cartagena, que son muchas hectáreas en producción, y esos abonos llegan al Mar Menor, hacen crecer las algas, las microscópicas y las filamentosas, y se produce un desequilibrio. Cuando el agua está muy verde, en el fondo no llega la luz del sol, se mueren las praderas y el ecosistema se pierde.
In the 24 years Pedro has been working to protect the Mar Menor, he's seen its health become progressively worse.
Hay otros problemas que además también degradan el Mar Menor. La construcción del borde litoral con el turismo, también los puertos deportivos, todas estas actividades tienen un impacto. Pero lo que lo está matando muy rápido es la entrada de demasiados nutrientes y eso es una muerte muy rápida.
And when the runoff from hectares of intensive farming becomes too much and the algae takes over, the effect on the lagoon is devastating. In 2016, an excess of nutrients led to an overgrowth which starved the lake of oxygen. This happened again in 2019 and in 2021. On these occasions, the pollution was so bad that marine life was suffocated. At the aquarium at the University of Murcia, marine biologist Emilio Cortez and his team breed different species, aiming to maintain a gene pool in case of another mass mortality event.
What an amazing place! Are all the species in the Mar Menor having problems?
Sí, sí, realmente hay algunas que son más resistentes que otras. Con los problemas que estamos viendo que tiene el Mar Menor, en los eventos críticos que hay puntualmente, les afectan a todas las especies. Con lo cual, todas las especies se pueden considerar que están en peligro, claro. Aquí tenemos, pues, estos son crías de caballito, que llevamos mucho tiempo trabajando con caballitos, con muchas especies.
In 2018, there were 48,000 seahorses in the Mar Menor. The mass mortality events hit them hard. By 2021, less than 2,000 remained.
So I've been given the task of feeding the seahorses their breakfast, and I've got here a delicious mixture of tiny shrimps and plankton. And I need to put it just in the current. So just here. Like this. There it goes. Breakfast is ready. These creatures are extraordinary. And this is what it's all about. It's about ensuring that life on Earth can continue. And look how vulnerable it is. So when can they go back into the Mar Menor?
Evidentemente, para nosotros liberar caballitos en el Mar Menor, las condiciones tienen que ser las mejores. Tiene que estar solucionado el problema del Mar Menor. Y esto ahora mismo es la pregunta del millón. Nadie sabe cuándo va a estar exactamente el Mar Menor en buenas condiciones.
Unless things change, future generations of the animals that once thrived in the Mamanor will only exist in this aquarium.
I've suddenly been overcome by a wave of grief, I think. Seeing all these amazing creatures, seeing nature in all its abundance and beauty here is wonderful, but it is so desperately, desperately sad. These incredible animals being forced to live in tanks away from their natural habitats. And conditions for them outside will become increasingly impossible as we continue our activities that are damaging their home. But nature can't be saved by scientists alone. The work needs to be done outside the laboratory too. And that's where the law comes in.
The law has come to the Mamanor's aid in a radical new way, never before used in this part of the world. Teresa Vigente is a professor in philosophy of law at Murcia University. A specialist in the rights of nature, she realized the protection offered by existing environmental laws simply wasn't enough.
El Mar Menor tiene muchas figuras de protección legal, pero todas estas figuras de protección han servido para probar que es un espacio ecológico de gran valor, pero no para protegerlo, porque con todas estas figuras ha ido cada año a peor y ahora está a punto de colapsar.
Why do the existing regulations not work?
Si quien defiende los derechos de la naturaleza se mantiene en un modelo económico y productivo que se caracteriza por la explotación ilimitada de los recursos naturales, nunca va a oír la voz de la naturaleza, porque la voz de la naturaleza y las necesidades de la naturaleza es diferente.
Following the mass mortality event of 2019, there was a public outcry. People demanded action to save the lagoon.
En ese momento, toda la sociedad murciana dio un salto en la conciencia ecológica. Los alumnos de esta universidad me plantearon hacer un estudio sobre cómo darle derechos al mar menor.
For Teresa, the solution was clear. Endow the Mamanor with its own legal rights in just the same way a person has them. A public campaign resulted in over 500,000 people petitioning the Spanish government for this to happen, enough to ensure the matter would be debated. In April 2022, the proposal reached Congress.
Comienza la votación.
En el momento en que comenzamos a ver las luces del Parlamento en verde, diciendo sí, todo eso nos llenó de alegría porque vimos que los políticos escuchaban la voz del pueblo, que era la voz de la naturaleza, y decían, estamos con vosotros.
In September 2022, it became official. The Mamanor was recognized as a legal entity in its own right, meaning it can be represented in the same way as if it was a minor. Citizens can bring a lawsuit on behalf of the lagoon against any person or organization infringing on its right to exist and flourish.
Es un cambio radical. Esa victoria para el Mar Menor se puede convertir en un referente para el mundo porque todas las comunidades del planeta están viendo cómo sus ecosistemas están colapsando y tienen ahora una respuesta.
How do you feel looking out at the Mamanor now?
Ahora no solamente sentimos dolor, sentimos dolor y orgullo y esperanza. Y ese es un sentimiento muy bonito.
The Mamanor's new legal status isn't going to suddenly solve and clean away the problems of the past, but it does set a new direction for the future. It gives the people who are defending it a really powerful weapon in their arsenal. And it starts to redefine the relationship between humanity and nature in this part of the world, which is so desperately needed.
And that relationship needs to be redefined in every part of the world and at every level. In the next program, I'll be meeting some of the business innovators who, rather than being forced into action through the courts, are leading the change and showing the way to a sustainable and flourishing future.